All right. I want you to do something for me. Pull up your calendar. Seriously, just open it on your phone right now. Today is Friday, February 20th, 2026. Now, I want you to scroll forward exactly 163 days. Where does that land you?
Well, that lands you squarely on Sunday, August 2nd, 2026.
August 2nd.
Yeah.
Because for the last 2 years, we've been talking about the EU AI Act as this theoretical future problem. It was always coming soon. It was kind of the monster under the bed.
Right.
But looking at that date, I mean, the monster's out from under the bed and it's basically making coffee in the kitchen. We are exactly 163 days, about 5 months away from the most significant deadline in global tech regulation.
It really is. It's the end of an era. I mean, we've been living in what some legal scholars called a holiday from history regarding AI.
Yeah.
You could build things, break things, release beta versions that hallucinated wildly, and the worst you got was a bad headline.
Yeah, a PR problem, not a legal one.
Exactly. But that holiday is officially over. If you're running a business in Europe, or, and this is the crucial part, if you are selling into Europe from anywhere else, that grace period is evaporating as we speak.
And that is exactly our mission for this deep dive today. We aren't doing the high level, AI is changing the world fluff. Everyone talked about the act passing back in 2024. But for most businesses, this is the year it actually bites. So we are going completely operational today.
Which is sorely needed right now.
Right. We're pulling directly from the official text of Regulation EU 2241689. We've got implementation timelines from the European Commission, plus some really sharp legal analyses from firms like ORIC and DLA Piper.
And we also pulled from operational guides from compliance platforms like Dayki and Haya AI Design. Because the law is one thing, but how you actually code for it and manage it daily is entirely different.
Exactly. Our goal is to cut through all that legal noise. We're going to explain what happens on August 2nd, help you figure out if your everyday business software is accidentally running high-risk AI, and list the steps you have to take now, not in July, but right now, to avoid massive fines.
And just to put a number on that, we are talking fines of up to 35 million euros or
Yeah.
7% of your global turnover. So it's not a slap on the wrist.
Not at all. Let's start with a quick level set. Because the AI Act didn't just drop out of the sky today, it's been a phased rollout. So where do we actually stand right now in the timeline?
So if we look in the rearview mirror, the first major phase hit back in February 2025. That was the ban on what they call unacceptable risk AI.
This is all the scary stuff that sounds like a sci-fi dystopia.
Pretty much. That's your social scoring systems,
Yeah.
real-time remote biometric identification in public spaces by law enforcement, with very few exceptions. Also, untargeted scraping of facial images from the internet. Think of models like Clearview AI.
Oh, and crucially, for anyone in HR, emotion recognition in the workplace or in schools was completely banned.
Yes, that was a huge one. You can't use AI to scan a Zoom call and tell a manager that their employee looks disengaged. That has been illegal for a year now. Then, fast forward to August 2025, and the rules for general purpose AI, or GPAI, kicked in.
Right, that was aimed at the foundation model builders, the companies creating the massive underlying models for things like ChatGPT or Gemini.
Exactly. They've been dealing with their own massive compliance headaches for months now.
So the bans are in place, the big model builders are regulated. Why is everyone circling August 2nd, 2026 as the big one? Why is this the date that actually matters for the average business?
Because this is the deadline that hits the rest of the economy. This is when the rules apply to high-risk AI systems, which are detailed in Annex 3 of the Act. And honestly, this is where the biggest misconception lies.
Because most companies looked at the 2025 bans and said, well, we aren't doing social scoring, we aren't the police, so we're safe.
Exactly. They thought they dodged it. But the net for high-risk AI is incredibly wide. It captures standard boring business software.
I really want to dig into that list because when I was reading through Annex 3, I kept having these aha moments. I kept thinking, wait, normal people use this stuff every single day. High risk doesn't just mean self-driving cars or robotic surgery.
Not at all. It's software you probably have running on your laptop right now. Let's look at HR and employment. This is probably the biggest trap for a generic corporate entity.
It seems like it, because the Act classifies AI as high risk if it's used for recruitment at all, screening CVs, ranking applicants, or making decisions on promotions and terminations.
Task allocation, too. If an algorithm is deciding who gets what shift or analyzing performance, that's high risk.
Okay, let me play a devil's advocate here. Say I'm a mid-sized company. I buy a tool that uses an LLM to just summarize resumes because our HR person doesn't have time to read 500 PDFs. The AI isn't explicitly saying, hire this person. It's just giving a summary. Is that high risk?
That is the million-dollar question, and it's exactly where legal teams are sweating right now. Think about it this way. If that summary omits key information, maybe a specific certification, because the model decided it wasn't relevant, and because of that omission, you don't interview the candidate.
Then the AI has materially influenced the decision.
Bingo. In the eyes of the regulator, that AI was part of the decision-making process for employment. That makes it a high-risk system.
So even a simple helper tool can be high risk if it acts as a filter. What about outside of HR? Where else is this hitting?
Education's a massive one. Any system determining access to education, admissions, or assessing students. Then you have what the Act calls essential private services. This hits the financial sector incredibly hard. Credit scoring is explicitly high risk.
Which is literally the core business model of every bank and fintech out there.
Right. If an AI helps determine if you get a loan or if it sets the pricing of your life or health insurance, it's high risk. And then you have critical infrastructure, managing traffic, water, gas, heating, electricity.
So if a smart algorithm is balancing the load on a municipal power grid to save energy, that's high risk.
Yes. Also biometrics. Remote biometric identification that isn't real time. Or biometric categorization. It's a huge list.
It seems like the common thread here is really just asking, does this AI have the power to negatively impact someone's life or their livelihood without a human noticing?
That's a very practical way to frame it. The EU is regulating the impact of the tool on fundamental rights, not just the underlying code.
Now, I know what every startup founder listening is thinking right now. They're thinking, I'm a team of 12 people. I'm not Microsoft. Surely there's a small business exemption or some threshold where I'm too small to regulate.
You would really hope so. But there isn't. There is no meaningful de minimis threshold in the AI Act. If three guys in a garage build a credit scoring API and sell it to a local bank, they are placing a high-risk system on the EU market. They are completely in scope.
Ouch. Okay, but I did see something about Article 6 in the notes from DLA Piper. They called it a filter condition. Is that a way out?
It's an escape hatch, but it's incredibly narrow. Article 6 basically says a system might not be high risk if it only performs a narrow procedural task.
How are they defining narrow procedural task?
Think of something like improving the visual quality of an image, or just improving the language or grammar of a document. It doesn't assess or change the actual content. It just cleans up the presentation. Or, if the AI detects patterns but does not materially influence the human decision-making process.
But I'm guessing you can't just quietly decide you fit that description and ignore the rules.
Definitely not. You can't fly under the radar. You have to formally document your assessment and register that you are claiming this Article 6 exception. You have to essentially raise your hand and tell the EU, I checked and I promise my AI is just doing procedural stuff.
And if the regulator disagrees, you're on the hook for those fines. I want to shift gears to something that really stood out to me in the ORIC legal analysis. They talk about the distinction between a deployer and a provider. Because in the normal software world, we just buy tools off the shelf. We think, well, we didn't build it, so the vendor is liable. But the AI Act has a trap door here.
It does, and it's called the value chain trap. It's under Article 25, and it is going to cause a lot of panic for procurement and product teams who aren't paying attention.
Let's walk through it. How does a company that just bought an AI tool suddenly become legally responsible for it as if they built it?
There are three specific conditions where you, the buyer, legally become the provider.
Hmm.
Condition one is white labeling. You put your own name or trademark on the system.
Which happens all the time in B2B. A consultancy buys a back-end HR screening tool, they slap their own logo on the dashboard, and they sell it to their clients as their proprietary talent engine.
As soon as your logo goes on it, you are the provider. You immediately inherit all the legal obligations of the tech giant who actually built it. You need the technical documentation, the training data logs, the risk assessments.
Which you don't have because you didn't write the code and you don't own the foundational model.
Exactly. You are liable for a black box you have no control over. Condition two is if you make a substantial modification to the system. But condition three is the truly subtle one. You become the provider if you change the system's intended purpose.
Give me a concrete example of changing the intended purpose in a normal business setting.
Sure. Let's say you buy a generic off-the-shelf chatbot. The vendor clearly sells it as a customer engagement tool for answering website FAQs. That's low risk. but your operations team realizes the bot is really good at conversing and asking questions. So they decide to hook it up to your careers page to do preliminary interviews with job candidates and score their answers.
Oh, I see where this is going.
You just took a low-risk marketing tool and used it for a high-risk purpose recruitment. The law says you have now created a high-risk AI system. The original vendor is completely off the hook because they sold you a customer service bot. You are now the legal provider of a high-risk HR system.
And suddenly, you owe the regulators a mountain of compliance paperwork that you didn't even know existed. That is genuinely sobering. It means procurement teams can't just sign a SaaS contract and walk away. They have to monitor how that tool is actually being utilized by the staff on the ground.
Absolutely. They accidentally inherit the obligations of a tech giant without realizing it.
Okay, let's assume the worst. I've done my inventory, I'm listening to this, and I realize, I am legally a provider of a high-risk system. August 2nd is 163 days away. What is actually on the compliance checklist? The guides from Daiichi and Hyadi make it look pretty heavy.
It is heavy. It's an engineering and operational requirement, not just a legal one. The first pillar is the risk management system under Article 9.
Risk management system sounds a lot like corporate speak for having a meeting once a year and updating a spreadsheet.
Not under the AI Act. It has to be a continuous iterative process that runs throughout the entire life cycle of the AI. You have to identify known risks, but also reasonably foreseeable risks.
Reasonably foreseeable. What does that mean for the engineers actually building this stuff?
It means you have to actively anticipate misuse. If you build a credit scoring tool, could it inadvertently be used to redline or discriminate against a certain zip code? You have to test for that edge case before you hit deploy.
Which naturally brings us to data governance under Article 10.
This is a massive one. You are required to have high-quality training, validation, and testing data sets. And you have to examine that data for potential biases to prevent discrimination. But it goes beyond just finding the bias.
You actually have to fix it.
Right. If your company's historical hiring data over the last 10 years is 90% male, and you train your model on that raw data, the model will just learn that men are statistically better candidates.
Yeah.
Under the AI Act, you can't just throw your hands up and say, well, the historical data was biased, not our fault.
It's your legal problem to actively correct for that bias using data balancing techniques.
Exactly. Then there is the human oversight requirement under Article 14, the human in the loop.
Now, this one feels paradoxical to me. The whole reason we buy AI is to automate processes, but the law says we have to have a human overseeing it.
It is a paradox, but the EU sees it as essential safety. And the requirement isn't just having a human staring blankly at a dashboard. The operator needs meaningful oversight. They need to genuinely understand how the system works, be able to spot anomalies, and crucially, they need a stop button. They have to have the actual authority to override the AI.
The sources mention a concept called automation bias in relation to this. Can you unpack that?
Yeah, automation bias is the psychological tendency for humans to just blindly trust what the computer tells them. If a junior loan officer sees the AI reject a mortgage application, they are statistically very likely to just click reject too. They assume the machine is smarter, and they don't want to stick their neck out by disagreeing with it.
Right. Nobody wants to be the person who approved the loan that defaulted when the super smart computer said no in the first place.
Exactly. But regulators are fully aware of this bias. So to prove you actually have meaningful human oversight, you might need to show audit logs where your human operators actually disagreed with the AI and overrode it.
Wait, really? So if my human staff agrees with the AI 100% of the time, a regulator might view that as non-compliant.
Yes, because it suggests your human oversight is purely cosmetic. The staff are just rubber stamping the machine. The AI Act specifically mandates AI literacy training under Article 4. You have to train your staff to be skeptical of the AI.
That is a massive culture shift for a lot of companies. You're telling them to train their employees to actively doubt the very expensive software they just implemented to make things faster.
It's the only way to avoid liability.
Yeah.
And speaking of proving things, you also have the technical documentation and logging requirements.
Right. Tackling the black box problem.
Yes. You need automatic recording of events. If the system makes a mistake or discriminates against an applicant, you need to be able to trace exactly why that happened. You have to register your system in the EU database under Article 71. You can't just shrug and say neural networks are a mystery.
And finally, for the really big players, there's the FRIA.
The Fundamental Rights Impact Assessment under Article 27. This is mainly for deployers who are public bodies or private entities providing vital public services like banking or insurance. Before you hit go, you have to formally assess how this system might impact specific groups of people. It's essentially a pre-mortem for civil rights.
We've spent a lot of time on high risk, but we haven't even touched on the rules for systems that aren't high risk. Things like transparency under Article 50. This is basically the deepfake clause, right?
It covers deepfakes, yes, but also everyday chatbots. If an AI system interacts with a person, it must explicitly disclose that it is an AI. So the days of chatbots pretending to be Sarah from customer support with a fake typing delay are over.
I think we've all been tricked by one of those at some point.
Well, it's illegal now.
Yeah.
And for synthetic content, AI-generated text, audio, or video, if it's artificially manipulated, it must be labeled. The user needs to clearly know what they're looking at isn't real.
Okay, so looking at this whole picture, we have a massive to-do list. Continuous risk management, dataset governance, human-in-the-loop training, exhaustive logging, transparency labels. How do companies actually do this in practice? Because you cannot track dynamic machine learning models in an Excel spreadsheet.
You really can't. And that's exactly why we're seeing this explosion of AI governance tools in the market. We mentioned Daiki earlier. They're a great example because they approach compliance from a developer-first perspective.
How so? What does that look like operationally?
Well, they have this concept of an AI registry. Think of it like a highly detailed warehouse inventory for all your company's models. But the really clever part is they add fingerprinting.
Explain that. Why do I need to fingerprint a software model?
Because AI models aren't like standard static code. Standard code generally stays the same until a developer explicitly pushes an update. AI models experience drift. They change and adapt based on new data they process. A digital fingerprint cryptographically proves that the model running in production today is exactly the same version that passed your legal compliance test 3 months ago.
Ah, I see. So without revealing your proprietary IP or the source code, you can prove to an auditor, this is the safe version we tested, not some rogue mutated version.
Exactly. It creates an undeniable audit trail. Daiki is actually piloting toolkits. They call them AI sisters to help companies automatically map their specific systems to the legal requirements. And then you have the new ISO standards coming in to glue all this together, specifically ISO 42001.
Is that kind of like ISO 27001 for information security?
Exactly the same concept, but for AI. It's the Artificial Intelligence Management System standard. It acts as a blueprint, doesn't legally guarantee you won't get fined, but it turns all these abstract laws into a structured, auditable process.
Uh-huh.
If you can show a regulator you're ISO 42001 certified, you're demonstrating that you aren't just winging it. You have a systemic approach to safety.
We've talked a lot about what to do, but let's talk about who is actually checking. Who enforces this? Is there a giant new AI police force being assembled in Brussels?
No, it's not centralized like that. Enforcement is distributed down to national competent authorities in each individual member state.
Which sounds like a recipe for wildly inconsistent enforcement.
It definitely is right now. Some countries are moving fast. Ireland and Italy are ahead of the curve. They already have their authorities designated. France is taking a very aggressive lead through the CNIL, which is their data protection authority. They're heavily emphasizing the link between GDPR privacy rules and the new AI Act rules.
But other countries are lagging.
Yes. Germany and Belgium have faced administrative delays in setting up their offices. But companies shouldn't mistake that administrative delay for leniency. The fines are set at the EU level. And remember, the Brussels effect means this applies globally.
Right. If you are a U.S.-based SaaS company, but your software processes data for a client in Paris, you're entirely on the hook.
Absolutely. The AI Act applies to anyone placing systems on the EU market,
right,
or where the output of the system is used in the EU. The European Union is effectively setting the global standard here because no major enterprise can afford to just ignore the European market.
So we've covered a lot of the scare tactics, the fines, the heavy compliance burden, but I want to end on a slightly different note. Is there an upside here? A lot of critics say this is just a massive tax on innovation that will put Europe behind.
There is a very strong strategic counterargument to that. Look at the current landscape. We are living in a world flooded with deepfakes, AI hallucinations, and rapidly eroding public trust in digital systems.
That is undeniably true. Trust is at an all-time low.
So put yourself in the shoes of an enterprise buyer. Imagine you are a major bank, a hospital network, or a government agency looking to procure AI software. Are you going to buy the move fast and break things model from a startup that ignores governance? Or are you going to buy the product that has a CE mark that is ISO 42001 certified and has totally transparent risk logs?
You're going to buy the safe one. The liability of buying the unsafe one is too high.
Exactly. Compliance is shifting from being a pure cost center to becoming a core product feature. It's a massive trust signal. This regulatory walled garden of Europe might actually become the premium market for global AI. If your product is robust enough to survive the EU regulations, it is safe enough for any major enterprise in the world to deploy.
That is a fascinating way to look at it. The regulations basically act as a global quality filter.
It's the Volvo effect. Volvo sold millions of cars by making safety their primary feature. European AI, or AI compliant with European rules, might sell by being demonstrably safer than the Wild West models out there.
That's a great perspective. So let's bring it all home. It is February 20th, 2026. We have 163 days to go until August 2nd. If someone is listening to this and they haven't started, what is step one for Monday morning?
Step one is a ruthless inventory. You cannot govern what you cannot see. You need to find every single piece of AI running anywhere in your company, including the random sauce tools your marketing team signed up for on a corporate credit card without telling IT.
The dreaded shadow AI. You have to root it out.
Find it. Then classify it. Be brutally honest. Does it fit the Annex 3 definitions of high risk? Do not try to lawyer your way out of it on day one. Assume it is high risk, and then check Article 25 to see if you accidentally became a provider because you white labeled it or repurposed it.
Did we rebrand it? That is the crucial question to ask the product team.
Yes. And if the answer is yes, you need to start building your risk management system and documentation today. Do not wait for July. These governance systems take months to properly implement.
Well, there you have it. The holiday from history is definitively over. It's time to get to work. August 2nd is coming fast, so go talk to your product teams, run that inventory, and maybe look at this compliance exercise as your new competitive advantage. Thanks for deep diving with us.
Always a pleasure.